Good afternoon. It is 12:02, and it's Thursday, a beautiful day. Yesterday, we had all kinds of hot weather. I'm Eric Scott. Hello there. And my guest this afternoon is the one, the only, a very driven individual I've noticed in our short acquaintanceship. Brian DeShays is with us of the Wolfboro Select Board. Thanks for coming in today. I really do appreciate it.
And thanks for having. Is it on?
Yeah.
Is it hot? Thanks for having it. Having me, Eric.
No problem. Always happy to see you and find out what's going on locally. By the way, if you have any questions, we'd be more than happy to do that for you at 569-5253. So you called me last week, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
This building permit fee, because there's a lot of people are building and rebuilding because, let's face it, housing prices are going nuts, and a lot of renovations will tend to add value to a home even more. And I've noticed, even just driving around, a lot of tradespeople's trucks and driveways and things like that. However, the permit fees are going up, and they don't. As you explained it, as I have it all here it's math. Now I'm in trouble, right? But it doesn't appear to be equal.
Yeah, so we've had a permit fee formula in the town that's been around for years. The best explanation I've had is that it was updated 15 years ago, but people have said that they've been here for longer than that and they've seen it the same. And nobody actually really ever explained to me where the formula came from. You could go back 15 or 20 years into town meeting minutes, and you would probably be able to find out exactly what it is. But that being said, it's still on the high end compared to some other municipalities right around the Lakes region, but it's on the low end compared to other municipalities throughout the state. Some charge a lot more, and it depends on the value of real estate in the specific area. So we have a wonderful new, highly trained building inspector, code enforcement officer, and director of planning now, two gentlemen. And they looked at their budget and they decided that for years, and this is the same again for lots of communities around our Lakes Region area, the department costs more to operate than they receive in permits. So there's a burden that ends up falling on the taxpayer for the difference. So they decided they were going to raise the permit rates. And they were originally also looking for a part-time helper to help them because they said that they had a lot more permits than typical, over 1,000. Well, again, that's the same for other towns around the lake. Some of them have been looking for part-time help too, but nobody has done it. Because, again, all the departments are paying more for their expenses than they are receiving permit revenues.
Now, are these increases meant to make the office self-supporting?
As much as possible, yes. Okay. There's a state RSA that allows you to charge as much for permit fees as what your expenses are for your department, for your building department. So that exists, and it's a good thing to do because we want to take the burden of taxes off the taxpayers, absolutely. But when they created their formula, the thing that hit me and it just didn't work for me was it increased the expense of the smallest house built in Wolfboro, a 960 square foot house, by 51%, and of course that makes it a pretty good, not a pretty good, but a sizable part of their construction budget. On the largest house built in Wolfboro in the last 18 houses over the last year, it only increased their permit expense, had they been using this new formula that was devised by the new building inspector code enforcement officer, by 24%. So only half. And that didn't make sense to me because I'm like, the person building the smaller home is building for less per square foot. They're building on a budget. It just doesn't make sense that they would have to pay a higher percentage than someone building a $6 million second home. I went home to my wife and I was shaking my head and she goes, what? And I said, if we were to build our house today using the new formula, we would spend $700 more on our permit. And when we built our house, we built it on a shoestring. We did the best we could. We tried to build a nice, green, energy-efficient home on as low a budget as we could, actually using recycled products, meaning lights that people were throwing away, flooring that people had discarded at a large mansion that they were building because they had excess, things like that. And I said, what would we have done if we had to pay $700 more? And she said, we probably wouldn't have bought a refrigerator.
Yeah.
So, but if someone's spending a couple of $1,000s more on a permit and they're building a $6 million house, that doesn't affect them. And people have to start thinking differently than we do. We have a very, very hard time, a lot of people, trying to understand, because we don't live in the realm of the people that can build a $6 million second home.
True. Even here. They're I mean, they exist, but they're not.
Oh, there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
But they're not a dime a dozen either.
No, well, there's a house for sale in Wolfboro right now that has, it's 1,770 square feet and it has 11 bathrooms. We can't even comprehend that.
No,
we can't. How much money does someone have to have or make to be able to afford that kind of property? I mean, so it's just that we need things to be fair and equitable across the board. So, and I'm not saying my way is the right way or the best way, but what I did was I tried to go back to my trigonometry from high school and college and create a curve that makes it so that the people building the smaller houses, so I worked it so that any house below 2,000 square feet, which I think is what a family would build in town, mm-hmm. that's still an expensive house. In this day and age, that could be $500,000 to $700,000 because the cost of materials has doubled. But I thought that anything 2,000 and down, they shouldn't pay more. They should pay less for their permits. And anything that creeps up above 2,000 and when you get up to 3,000 and 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 square feet, they should pay a little bit extra for their permits and help subsidize or pay for our building department. It's not like we have wealthy people running our building department either. I mean, they make an average pay. Their pay is in line with everybody around the Lakes region. Then, you know, and it's not like they're millionaires and we're paying them a huge salary.
Right.
But we should be able to, you know, receive. I used to work for the Department of Agriculture. Okay. And believe it or not, the Department of Agriculture has a division that is all inspection division, completely self-funded. All the inspections done pay for the department as a whole. It's one of the only government departments that is self-sustaining 100%, always has been. So it can be done. And it can be done without hurting people that don't need to be adversely affected.
Well, the FCC does it too, by the way.
There you go.
They don't take any tax money anymore.
Yep.
It's been a while,
mm-hmm.
But they used to, but that was a very long time.
So all I want is for people to not rush into this, for the town not to rush into it. Let's see, 15 years and 6 months, does that matter? It's been 15 years since it was last revisited.
Right.
Another 6 months isn't going to matter. Because once you jump and change something, and then you try and jump and change it again, it's not a good optic. It means you didn't do your job the first time.
And I understand that things need to be funded, but as you said a minute ago, the price of building materials has doubled.
Yep.
Is this a great time to be raising permit fees?
Well, the permit cost, again, is not a huge, huge portion of the construction budget. If you're in the water and sewer town, you pay $8,000 to hook up to water and sewer. When you build a house in town, you have to pay a $4,600 impact fee. So, the building for a 2,000 square foot house right now, the building with our current formula we use, it's $588 for a permit fee. Using their formula, it would go up to $936. Using what I want to use, it goes down to $591. Well, actually, it's flat. It's within $3. So it's just that's not a huge portion, and that's not going to hurt somebody with their construction budget. And this is not based on construction costs. We're not charging somebody a permit fee based on how much their house costs, but the size of their house.
Right.
And that should be a fair and equitable way to do it.
I've noticed you've got a couple of proposed changes to the formula here.
Yep. So what you can do with the trig formula I did, or any formula that's made, you can use different cost factors in the formula. So it's very easy, depending on the economy, how things are, what size houses are being built, to change the cost factor. And that cost factor is based on the average cost of materials and expenses to build a house right now.
Okay.
So it can be if we have a housing recession, we can change that cost factor to make it easier for people and be our have our building expense, you know, our building permit expense go down a little bit.
That was actually part of my next question is,
yep.
As you know, things are very, very hot in the housing market. At some point, there's got to be the inevitable crash.
Correct.
And probably my spider sense tells me probably within 2021. But we'll see.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. It's going to happen at some mm-hmm. point. So are you able, since this formula has been in effect for 15 years, how dynamic is it? How easy is it for the select board to change it if there was a big material change in the housing market?
Well, the one that's been here 15 years, or that was the last time it was altered. I don't think they know how to alter it to make it increase, or else they would have used the same formula and just made a change to it. So they came to the Board of Selectmen with a completely different formula. Unfortunately, their formulas are front-end loaded because they start with a $250 base cost for small constructions, anything under 4,000 square feet, and a $350 base cost for anything over 4,000 square feet. So when you front-end load a formula like that, it makes it so that the lower-priced houses or the smaller houses have a higher permit cost. And that's just, to me, that's, we need to keep the smaller, okay, we're talking about workforce housing. Have you ever heard that term?
Sure.
Have you ever heard it spoken in New Hampshire?
Rarely.
Wolfboro. I mean, there's Harriman Hills. Every single week, there's something in our town officials, the builders in town, people renting. We need workforce housing in New Hampshire. We need workforce housing in New Hampshire. And then we're going to raise the cost of small housing permits by 51%. Does this make sense?
No. If I were a builder, I would.
Now, the builders, I understand, they're not going to, they might not like this because when they're building their big houses, they're going to have to charge their customer a larger building permit.
Sure.
But again, we have to understand, someone who's building a large house with a million and millions and millions of dollar budget, if they have a permit fee that is $6,000 or $8,000, think $6,000 of $6 million, and think $600,000 of $600,000. Isn't it the same thing? Divides out equal.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
So the permit cost per project comes out the same. And the person building the bigger house should pay the same. Makes sense. They don't get a $180,000 Mercedes for $15,000.
True.
They pay $180,000 for it because they want a $180,000 Mercedes. The person buying the $25,000 Kia Sorento, that's my son's car, pays $25,000. Right. If they wanted to, they could buy the Kia, but they want the Mercedes. So if they want a $6 million house, they should pay the same percentage for their $6 million house as the person building a $600,000 house.
So like a flat rate, like a
well, it is. It my formula works out so that everybody pays the same based on their square footage and their construction costs for their property, for what they're building. And by the way, I think we should leave until we should do this as a base, and we should leave the electric and the plumbing and all the other permits the same, and the permits for small additions and decks need to stay about the same. Again, because, I mean, someone building just a small deck on their house shouldn't have to, you know, pay the same as someone building, you know, a monstrous, you know, 15,000 square foot deck on their property.
It's funny, you have a unique ability to anticipate my questions. And that was my next question, is what about swimming pools, decks?
Yeah, they should all, everything should.
In-law apartments, whatever.
I am all about incremental change. We don't need to change everything radically one time. That's how you make mistakes. I mean, look at the car industry. They're finally learning. It took them 40 years that incremental changes in vehicles every year is much better than scrapping and completely redesigning. Every time they did that, the first year, what happened? They had a car that was terrible.
Right.
And then it took them 5 years to get it working right.
GM especially.
Yes. And so so what we need to do is incremental changes. Let's start by making a level playing field for the permits to build houses and additions. You know, large additions, large houses, small and large projects. Then later we can look at the other fees and adjust them as we want. Maybe we can adjust them down. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? Maybe we can make it so that that there's a flat fee for electrical inspections for houses that are a certain size and only have two bathrooms, and a different fee for five bathrooms. Maybe we do it as a per bathroom fee for plumbing inspections. Who knows? There are other ways to do it. Let's take it in steps. Let's get some revenue into the building department so that the taxpayers aren't footing the bill, and let's do incremental changes.
Do you happen to know roughly what the building department costs to run?
I have all the numbers, but I don't have them with me.
That's okay.
Yeah, I don't have them with me. I know that they're saying that they run, and that's why their number came up at the first public hearing about this, that they needed to increase their fees by 46% to cover their costs. Later, they adjusted that number up to 75% because then they were using loaded costs, meaning they were including their benefits and their retirement pay also, the amount that's paid for their benefits.
76%?
75%.
Yeah. What happened to get things so out of balance?
Well, like I said, it hasn't been adjusted.
It hasn't been adjusted.
15 years.
So what do you mean it hasn't been adjusted? It hasn't gone up?
They haven't raised. It's been exactly the same for 15 years.
Now, I understand there's been a bit of a...
Kudos to the building department for doing this.
Sure.
I mean, really, I mean, is there anything that we buy now that we buy at the same price as 15 years ago?
No.
No. I wish there was.
Yeah, that's true. Especially when it comes to groceries.
But yeah, absolutely.
That's a different story entirely.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about some of the pushback you've heard.
What I've heard is that people are concerned that the fees are going to double. And that was my concern, but my concern more for the smaller projects. Because our new building inspector actually said two or three times at public meetings that he was reviewing a big project. Now think about this. When he's reviewing a house with six bedrooms that's 6,000 square feet, how much time does it take him? And when he goes out to inspect six bathrooms for plumbing and a house that large for electrical, he spends a lot of time. So inherently that permit needs to cost more. But besides that, he said that he put a permit in front of a designer or architect or builder who was building a large house for someone. And the guy looked at it and he said, $2,300 and something dollars. He goes, aren't you missing a zero?
Wow.
This is not offline. Portsmouth, New Hampshire charges seven. And the way they do it is they have a building inspector who was a builder for years and years and years. And I talked to him extensively. And he said that they do it based on $7 per thousand construction costs.
Okay.
All right. So if somebody builds a $1,000 addition, it's $7.
Okay.
What can you build for $1,000? If you build a $10,000 addition, it's $70.
Right.
If you build a $700,000 addition, and so it goes up. But he said, we don't have properties built in Portsmouth that ever cost less than $1 million. And he said, we have large commercial, and their commercial is $10 per thousand. He goes, we have large commercial buildings built in Portsmouth where we charge $1 million for the permit.
I was going to say 10% of $100,000 is $10,000.
Yeah.
Per thousand.
Yeah. So they charge a lot of money for their permit fees, and they can because there is not a there's not a small or an inexpensive building, and people just expect that. If you're going to build in Portsmouth, you're going to pay a large construction cost, a large permit fee.
Is it supply and
demand? I don't know. And I asked him, I said, did you consider putting a cap so that, and he goes, the city council in Portsmouth said no cap. If somebody wants to build a $10 million building, then they're gonna pay that construction cost. That's it.
That's a hell of a cost.
Yeah. So we're not out of whack. And the a lot of the towns around the lake are in the same situation as us. They're running departments, and the taxpayer is footing a lot of the bill for it. It's kind of come to be commonplace in the entire state of New Hampshire. But there's nothing wrong with equalizing it as long as we don't hurt the people who are our year-round residents who are building their first homes, the young families, the, you know what I mean, with children that are coming to our school that are going to have to pay a $4,600 impact fee for their little house that they're building. Let's save them where we can.
What does this impact fee cover?
It covers the cost of the school budget.
Okay.
Because it's when a family moves to town and they have more children, the children are introduced into the school, there's a cost per student associated for every student in our district.
Right.
And this was done years and years ago, and it was set at, I believe it's $4,600, and it's a one-time fee to make sure that with an influx of students that your school budget isn't, you know, suffering.
Now, this applies even if you don't have kids, right?
Correct.
Okay. So it's an impact fee, as it's called.
Yes.
Even though, what did you say, $4,600?
Yeah.
Well, if you've got three kids, I mean, that could be easily $30,000 a year.
For the kids in school?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it was something that's before my time. And it's something that I think is going to be revisited sometime in the future. But that's something that is the school board is in charge of, not the selectmen.
Well, select board member Brian DeShays is my guest this afternoon here on WASR on a beautiful day. We got ripped out of a thunderstorm last night because it rained for, 14 seconds? I love thunderstorms. I do. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, it's going to rain. It's going to rain. Oh, we got thunder. We got nothing. Okay.
Now, where were you located?
Oh, I was in Tilton.
Oh, here? We got it hard.
I heard.
Yep.
I saw it on the radar. I'm like, oh, yeah. See, Wolfboro's really getting it.
Yep, we did.
I was, I was with my kids at the time, so last night. Now, one of the other subjects I wanted to talk about were the electric chargers, the EV chargers that are proposed for the city, or for the town, I should say. You said something right before we went on the air that was kind of interesting to me, that this had been sitting around for the better part of...
They've been working on it for 9 or 10 months.
Right.
And the problem is that... original costs for it that were gathered by individuals was $30,000, and they were looking for grants from the VW settlement. But the VW settlement grants are going towards level 3 chargers, the superchargers along main corridors. That money is probably never going to come to Wolfboro because we don't have, you know, tens of thousands of cars a day going by our off-ramp because we don't have an off-ramp. So we need to do what's called a level 2 destination charger. And that's where someone comes and plugs in. They're there for a couple hours. They pick up 50 to 75 or 40 to 75 miles of range, spend the afternoon, have lunch, you know, use Wolfboro as a destination, enjoy our town, and they go on to their next location. Or somebody who's renting a cottage on the water and doesn't have the availability to charge their electric car. Talking to some of the businesses in town, they said that they had had communications with people that said, oh, where can I charge my electric car if I come up? Well, the only place that has chargers is the Wolfboro Inn. Wolfboro Inn offers them to their guests. They have two Tesla and one regular standard charger. But if you don't stay there, so people would opt to not bring their electric car. I actually heard of one situation where somebody brought their electric car, plugged it in with a long extension cord to a establishment in town, and almost burned the building down because it was overheated because they used too long of an extension cord that wasn't at the rated weight. And it's been a great idea, and the Energy Committee has been working on it, and we're getting closer because I'm going to leave them anonymous for now, but we've had 5 donors in town that have all come to the table, and they've said, great idea. Yes, we've heard from people, and it's a good thing. And so we're now researching different companies and different ways to do it, leasing, buying, and we're trying to do it without going to the taxpayers for any dollars, $0.
Okay.
So there's going to be no impact on the taxpayers. It's either going to be grants or donations. And we're looking at locations where it won't affect our very tight parking situation as it is.
Well, once again, you've anticipated my question is where would they go? Because someone would have to park there for 3, 4, 5 hours.
Well, actually, not really, because you can do a lot with these chargers. These are smart chargers. We can actually set them so that they are allowed to charge by, they can pick a 20-minute session, half-hour session, three-quarter-hour session, an hour session, and we can limit it up to a 2-hour session. After 2 hours, they get a notification with a text message that says you need to move your vehicle. And that text message can also go to the police department at the same time. So the police department can also be aware that a car is there, and if it's been there 5, 6 hours, they can do whatever they need to do. We don't want to be mean to people using the chargers, but what we want to do is, and this happens all over the country, they have to make sure that people don't use the charging spot with either an electric or a non-electric car just because it's open.
Right. Okay.
So they, you know, so people would have to be. So again, it's something that is generally people are pretty courteous about them, like a handicap spot, and we're looking at either the Glendon Street lot down along Foss Field, which is kind of off the beaten path and doesn't usually fill up during the summer, and we're also looking at a location behind the new train museum in town, which is the Model Railroad Train Museum, because there's a town lot right there beside it where we could put a couple of cars that's not being used right now for anything.
Okay. Now, when you charge up at these things, will there be a fee to do that?
Yes, the town will have to charge a fee because we can't give away town electricity,
right?
Because then it comes back to taxpayer money.
Right.
And we don't do that to the citizens in town. Whenever we can, you know, I mean, if you have to, because you need to replace your sewer processing plant, yes, everybody has to kind of pay for that or increase our electrical infrastructure. But for this, we would be recouping the cost of the electricity going through the unit at a bare minimum, and that's it. So that the person who charges pays, you know, 13 to 18 cents a kilowatt, so that it's self-sustaining. Doesn't cost the taxpayers any money.
Yeah, because that's about what it costs.
Yep.
Somewhere in that, depending on where you live, of course.
Yeah, there are businesses in our state and throughout the country that give free charging just as complimentary.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to a Marriott hotel and they had a charger out there, what do you think the electric bill for a Marriott hotel is?
Thousands of dollars a month.
Yeah, easily. Huge. So someone charging a little charger that costs $2 an hour, they don't even see that bill. So there are a lot of businesses that do give them free. There are municipalities that some, especially in California. California, if you put a charger up, a municipality or a business, you're reimbursed by the state. So you can give it away free, and then you get reimbursed the cost of your electricity. So that's a no-brainer for them. In New Hampshire, it can be anywhere from some municipalities have a few free chargers, but they're much bigger municipalities than Wolfboro is, of course. And but a lot of the rates in New Hampshire go anywhere from 29 to 59 cents a kilowatt, which sounds like a lot, but that means if you put in a Tesla or a Nissan Leaf and you charge for 2 hours, you're looking at a $7 to $9 bill.
Okay, which is cheaper than buying gasoline.
Yeah,
right.
Or comparable to gassing up with a car. Because remember, 90% of all electric charging on EV vehicles happens in people's garages,
right,
or at their home. Everybody who has an EV charges at home. It makes sense because you're using your home rate, which is the cheapest.
And the beauty is the cost of electricity is relatively stable.
Yes, it's very stable. In Wolfboro, it's very stable and it's very low.
Right, but even with Eversource or with the co-op,
yep,
it only changes usually once a year.
And they give you, Eversource and co-op give people with EV cars a subsidy for their electric car for the cost of the electricity for it, and they will give you $1,000 or $1,500 rebate when you buy one, and they give you a discount on a charger.
You'd be surprised what I can only speak for Eversource because that's who I have.
Yeah,
we just bought a refrigerator last year,
yep,
and for buying an Energy Star refrigerator, they wrote me a check for $50.
Yep, there you go.
Well, great. I mean, yeah, granted, it's not much when you compare the cost of a refrigerator,
but
hey, thank you.
Yeah, every little bit helps.
Right.
And it's a good thing because, believe it or not, electricity is cleaner than fossil fuels. It is.
Well, we use fossil fuels to generate it.
In New Hampshire, and I've looked at the numbers before, and anybody can correct me, I don't mind, 60% of our energy comes from the Seabrook Power Plant. 30% almost comes from natural gas. Then we have one coal plant, a little bit of biomass, and solar for the last 10%. So natural gas is about as clean burning as you can get. It can burn at 98-99% efficient. And the nuclear, is a zero carbon footprint.
Right.
If you use electricity in Wolfboro, you're using a very, very small carbon footprint for your electricity.
Right.
It's better than burning gasoline in your car or burning home heating oil. And I don't want the home heating oil people to go out of business. They need a business too. We need a blend of conscious and feasible energy right now. Look at what happened with Texas.
In the pipeline,
when they had the storm and the freezing.
There
needs to be a very conscious management, but we need to move towards more sustainable energies. It's just something we have to do.
All right.
And the technology for batteries is coming a long way. Queensland University just came out with a battery that they're commercializing. It's called an aluminum ion battery. It is this will be in cell phones in the next year or two, and it will be in electric cars by 2025 or 26. It holds 3.5 times more energy, uses no precious metals, and charges 60 times faster. So it will make it so that your cell phone lasts almost 3 days, and you can charge it in 10 seconds.
Well.
And electric cars, they're saying it will increase from today's baseline 750 miles on an electric car, and it will charge in 5 minutes.
Wow.
So now that's where you get to the point where you pull into it's not a gas station, it's an electric station. You plug in the high-speed charger, you go in and get a soda, you come out, your car's topped off, you drive away. So we are moving toward in that direction.
That's quite a bit.
And that's why Wolfboro, we're going to be one of the few towns in New Hampshire that has a destination site for charging. And I think it's a good thing.
What about some of the people, let's face it, when you want to build anything, there are always going to be a few people who don't want it.
Yep.
Have you found any serious
The only concern is there are people who have businesses in the downtown area that are concerned about parking. That's the number one thing. They're just concerned about parking. Because we know how tight it is in right. town. But it's not tight like that every day and every minute. The weekends are busy. People like our town. The beginning of or the end of June till the first week in August, it's busy down there. But again, we're using it on a lot that hasn't been used.
Right. So it won't take away spaces from.
Correct. I went down there. I've been going down there and investigating the site. And I did it again this past weekend when it was beautiful out and there were zero cars parked in that area.
Wow.
So that takes some concern off of my mind.
A lot of things going on. I have here the schedule of everything that happened at the select board.
No, you don't.
Oh, not everything?
Well, you have the select board stuff, right. But I sit on seven committees.
Ah, okay.
And so does every other selectman. We do have overlap, but I don't know the exact number of committees. Let's see. I'm going to guess that there's probably 20 committees that run, at least 20 committees that are running all the time in Wolfboro, and I only get to see, seven of them. There are other committees that I try and attend as many meetings as just a guest as possible, mm-hmm. but it's when you're already working on seven of your own and everything else. And trying to focus on getting projects accomplished and helping out your committees, yeah, it becomes difficult.
Are you on the cable franchise committee?
Yes, I am, for the first meeting. So I don't know much yet, and okay. I'm the first one to admit that.
And that's okay.
Okay, I tell people when I go into a room that I am the dumbest person in the room until I educate myself about my subject.
Well, let's talk about what the committee actually does. Right now, we've got a contract with Atlantic Broadband.
Correct.
Has there been any discussions about a competing company?
There always is, and there was at this last meeting. Competition is a good thing.
Yes.
From what I've been told by, this is, again, very little knowledge on this. I'm starting to learn. Mm-hmm. But they said, what I've been told is that Atlantic Broadband, of course, has done all the infrastructure.
True.
So having competition when they own the wires, the lines, and all the infrastructure becomes difficult. What people are hoping or looking towards is that when 5G becomes available through our whole area, that we can use that as an alternative because you'll have download speeds that will be able to give you internet and streaming and things like that. Because right now the cable companies, they're kind of under a lot of pressure. And I'm not going to say I love cable companies. Absolutely not. But right now, and you've seen this online, cord cutting.
Sure.
Is what it's called. And a lot of people are using Roku. NBC just started a streaming system.
Peacock. Yeah.
And so there are a lot of, and they're saying that you're going to have just as good a TV network experience as through cable companies. So now we know that the cable companies, if you've ever gotten your cable bill over the years, internet's $79.99 and your total bill is $200-something.
Yeah.
So where are they making their money? TV. Where are they losing their market share? TV. Okay, so internet, of course, is going to go up because their TV share is going down. It's something I just saw it recently that it was like 30 or 40% of people have cut their cable lines for their TV applications. Well, the problem, not their internet yet, but
right.
their TV.
Well, the internet is the main pipeline of entertainment
Correct.
Coming into the house.
Correct.
So I don't think anyone would... I shouldn't say that anyone. There's a new company that has been moving into the area called Hub 66.
Yep.
In fact, we're going to be talking with them sometime next week.
Okay.
I believe it's Tuesday morning on Daybreak on the Lake with Daryl. And they are a wireless internet provider.
Yep.
They use radio frequencies and other things to literally put high-speed internet into your home without any construction.
Yep. It, Starlink, isn't it?
Starlink is another one, yes.
With Elon Musk.
Yes.
He's put up more satellites that they say people with telescopes can see the millions of satellites going in the sky.
Really?
And that they think people think they're stars.
And that there will eventually be thousands of those.
Correct. And so there's another way. But the problem with those is they don't have they don't have as much upload and download speed. Download is easy. Upload is hard.
Right.
And so between Starlink, between Hub 66, and between having 5G through either T-Mobile or Verizon or something, we will have options down the road. So what the cable TV franchise committee, what they look at is they look at our contract to make sure that our contract is fair and equitable. We negotiate prices to the best of the town's ability. And they look at other technologies coming down the road and how we can give people another option. But it is difficult when they own the infrastructure.
Right, but that doesn't mean either you could rent space on it or just
Correct.
Build your own.
Correct.
I mean, if it, well, who was it when it was originally built? Community TV, I think?
Yep.
Quite a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they did it and survived.
Yep.
So, you know, I know Laconia has just approved Comcast coming in.
Yep.
Now, I don't know the details of how they're going to attach their wires,
yep.
whether to the existing ones or not. But
yep.
As you say,
yeah, because there's sharing and licensing agreements that companies use.
Right. Part of the problem is a lot of people don't know this, that cable companies have to pay for their signals.
Mm-hmm.
The channel owners, and of course it goes way up every year, which is why every so often you see one get pulled for a while.
Yep,
that's because they couldn't come to an agreement on.
And another thing that people don't realize too is we're geographically closer to Portland than we are to Boston.
Right, right. We're technically in the Portland TV market.
Correct, and so it's. Depending on where someone originated from, sometimes they choose to want to have the Boston stations compared to,
right.
you know, to the main stations.
And it's funny because if you go 10 minutes down the road into Alton,
yep.
you're back in Boston again.
Correct. So
I mean, I know they got to draw the line somewhere.
Yep.
But wouldn't it have made sense to put that little part of New Hampshire and Windham County, Vermont? Which includes Brattleboro, is also in the Boston market for some strange reason. I don't know. But yet Plymouth and Grafton County is Burlington-Plattsburgh. That's like, okay. Yeah, sometimes you don't. And that's the problem is a lot of companies are only licensed to do business in certain areas.
Correct.
Like Locast, which is a wonderful internet-delivered broadcast channel package. You can get it at locast.org. It's $5 a month.
Yep.
You can't beat it.
Yep.
And it's got all those little sub channels that especially if you don't have a cable or satellite subscription. I love the Game Show Network, Buzzer. I don't know why, but old game shows. The shag rugs and the clothes and you know the whole bit. It's really
bell bottoms.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, hosts in leisure suits and things like that. But my point is, it's entertainment is now coming in all kinds of ways, and it's going to we're going to need to keep up our infrastructure so we can keep taking advantage of it. And I guess that's the important part. I noticed there was a a conversation about possibly replacing some cables if 5G comes in.
Okay, now that's one I haven't heard of.
Oh, that was right on the, I believe that was the last one, wasn't it? Yeah, talk of 5G replacing cable. I see.
Yes.
I'm see.
So, because they're believing that once we have a 5G network, that we'll be able to use the 5G as a strong enough signal to upload and download and run your computers all wirelessly.
Right.
Instead of having to be tied to a cable line. And that would create competition with the cable companies.
Sure.
So who knows? Cable may be something that goes, you know, the way of the railroad. They're around all the time, but they become a small player instead of a large player. They were very, very necessary at once. I can remember when I was a little boy, I lived kind of close to Boston, and 30 miles away or something, and we had six channels with an antenna.
Oh, yeah. We had one growing up.
Yeah, six channels with an antenna. And then I would drive to Lewiston, Maine to visit my grandparents. They had cable television.
Yeah.
I was like, what is that? You know, I'm 7, 8 years old, and they had 30 stations on the TV. I'm like, this is unbelievable. My grandfather would be watching sports 24/7 on whatever was going on, golf, tennis, this, that, the other thing. And that was, I mean, that's 45, 50 years ago.
My grandfather did the same thing, and they lived in Everett, Mass., and they had cable. I grew up in Peabody,
yeah,
which didn't have cable until the early 80s.
Yep.
I remember it coming in,
yep.
But it was like, oh, yeah, if the president was on, your night was shot.
Yep.
There was just nothing to watch on TV, you know.
So
it was a good time, but I don't miss it, if that makes any sense. I was noticing on this piece of paper, this last Board of Selectmen meeting.
Yep.
Some very, very good things came out of the Select Board. Maker's Mill got a wonderful community development block grant.
Correct.
How did that
That's Josh who
he's been here.
Yeah, he's
nice guy.
He's phenomenal. He's actually I was talking to him about a $30,000 USDA grant that he received for Maker's Mill that he had to fill out twice to get it right, but he knows how to get the money where the money needs to be got for a good cause. That's a great cause that he has going
sure
there.
Sure it is. Yeah.
It's gonna help a lot of young entrepreneurs, or maybe old entrepreneurs. Somebody who's been making furniture for 20 years and all of a sudden decides, I can open up a shop and I can make dining room sets for people because I have tools and capability and a space. So he's really, really good with the grants. And so that was a grant that, again, people have to understand, when the Tesla car, police car, was donated to the town of Wolfboro, that donation has to be approved. There has to be a public hearing for it. Citizens have a right to say, yes, we want the donation, or no, we don't, even though that doesn't kind of make sense. Who would not want a donation?
I was just going to ask
Well, what if it was a donation to build, and remember, if you accept the donation for its purpose, you have to use that purpose.
Right.
So when that donation was first presented to the town, the Board of Selectmen wasn't told that it was for a Tesla police vehicle. It was just listed as a donation to the police department.
Okay.
So it had to be tabled, and it had to be brought back to us with proper language so that we could accept it as a police vehicle. And I pushed to have it used as an administrative car more than a patrol car, because we don't know what an electric car is going to do in cold weather conditions in our town.
Right.
Sitting trying to keep an officer warm for 3 hours when they're stuck in a location or something, and then all of a sudden there's not enough charge in it if he needed to drive 30 minutes out of town for something quickly. Right. But I'm glad we got it, and if it works well, maybe that's a way we go in the future. But anyways, we had to accept that donation. What if somebody wanted to donate, and this is going to be ridiculous, somebody wanted to donate $10,000 to put a statue of a chicken in a 12-foot-tall statue of a chicken in Cape Park.
Okay, so the Purdue company says we want to put a statue in Cape Park.
Would we accept that donation?
I doubt it.
Yes, because we don't want a statue of a chicken in Cape right. Park. So, but every donation coming to the town has to be approved. Public has to be able to speak on it, and the Board of Selectmen have to approve it.
Everyone?
Every donation.
Okay. Wow, so, fascinating.
So that's what it has to do. So even getting that block grant, it has to be approved because the Board of Selectmen and the town manager have to sign off on it because it's a state grant to go to Maker Mills.
Okay. I noticed a lot of event permits have been passed out, things like that,
yep.
Even though I guess there was an issue with the meeting date.
Yeah, there was a typo on a meeting date, so we had to table a lot of the radio stations' permits to play music at locations, and then
yes, I remember,
and then they were all approved. Of course, it was just a typo, but I'm glad that music is happening at the bandstands again. I just had an article that I read that said that Rhode Island became the 8th or 9th New England state or whatever it was to the 9th state in the country and one in New England that made it to 70% of their citizens having the first shots. So I think we're waiting on New York. And if New York, and they were at 66% based on the couple articles that I've read and looked up. So I think we're going to hit, I'm hoping, the 70% of first shots for the states geographically surrounding New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut. New Jersey has already made it, and New York. New York, I believe, is the last one that we're waiting for. And if we get 70% of the adults have had their first shot, then that takes us over one of the hurdles that we have with the for the parade. The others are that we can't have any spikes in hospitalizations or other variants showing up and something like that.
And once again, you've anticipated my question, is what's with the parade?
Yeah.
So as of this point, still up in the air.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to come down to New York. Now, again, it can always be revisited, but based on the stipulations that are out now, and the stipulations, people have to understand, it has to make sense. The parade is not run by the town. It's run by a private organization. And who would want to put the weight of everybody's safety on their shoulders?
I can understand that.
So, and I think it's been very fair, very reasonable. I think they were very, very cautious in January, and rightly so. Things were rough in the country in January.
Yes.
But they didn't slam the door. They left the door open so that we could morph and we could incremental changes. Thoughtful incremental changes. And that's what has happened. And I think we're going to I'm hoping, but we're getting really close.
You have a unique ability to see red tape and say, this shall not stand. And just find a way either through it or around it.
It's hard. It's hard.
I'm sure it is, but not a lot of people have that ability.
I grew up in a family with a mom who was had more common sense than most people I've ever met. My dad, for that matter, too, but my mom. The common sense that she has and always following me and telling me, teaching me to follow the right path. Mm-hmm. Follow the right path, do the right thing, and but you there is a lot of red tape in town government and in any government, in business organizations, in the school district. I work in the school district. You have to be thoughtful. You have to listen to other people. Like I said, I'm never the smartest person in the room, and I'm not smarter than a room full of people. Anybody who thinks they're smarter than a room full of people, they're mistaken.
That makes sense.
You know how much I learned from you just now about how Vermont is tied to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, about the different regions for... Yeah, I never knew that. And I will carry that with me the next time I go to a cable franchise committee meeting.
Yeah, you're going to be a radio or a TV geek to know that one anyway.
Well, that's okay. It's not... I mean, that's your industry, your knowledge, and that I don't have, and you learn from people every day.
What do you tell people who express frustration with the select board? A lot of times they'll think, if I have to pay more, I automatically don't like it.
Yep.
And nobody does, but yep, that's the way it goes. But what do you tell them?
Well, why I ran for the select board is because there had been years where I looked at things and I'm like, why are they doing that? Why is that money being spent like that? So on and so on. So I wanted to get on so that I could... So I could learn, so I could, you know, educate myself, and so that I could try and the best I could at certain times direct things in a way that was fiscally conservative and made sense. What I have found out is that unless you really get involved and sit and have intimate discussions with people in town government, it's very easy to misunderstand what's happening. An example is the ladder truck that we bought, where everybody was saying, why are we, the town's going to go out and spend $1.3 million on a ladder truck. And people didn't realize that $100,000 was put aside every year for 10 or 12 years to save up for the ladder truck, because they knew 12 years ago that ladder truck had an expected life, that after 37 years or whatever it was, that it wasn't functional anymore. It's like a 37-year-old tractor or a 37-year-old boat or a 37-year-old car. Right. It has a life expectancy.
And finding parts.
Correct. Right. So all that was asked for was the last $200,000 or $300,000 at the end of the contract, because finally our ladder truck had failed the state safety requirements. It couldn't be used anymore. We had to call New Durham when we had a fire at Brewster Academy because it was in one of their tallest buildings. So it's, you know, and then people would say the fire truck, and I'd say, well, hold on. Do you know we already have $1 million for it? We do. Yes, you approved it 10 years in a row. $100,000 a year in a reserve account for the ladder truck, because we knew we were going to need one.
So it's been sitting there collecting interest the whole time.
Yeah, and waiting to be spent on the ladder truck when we needed it. Now, I can honestly say that there were times when I looked at an expense and I said, really? We're going to do the town's doing $600,000 for that? But I wasn't educated at the time. I didn't know that the money had been talked about, been put aside, that, you know, had been bonded, whatever. So I encourage people to call and ask and say, why is this and where's the money coming from? And the town will explain it to you. I will do the best I can. If I don't know, I'll find out. And more times than not, people are going to see that the town, where I think they could be sometimes a little more fiscally conservative, the town does not spend as badly as I used to think.
Well, now that you've been involved in the select board, unfortunately, we are out of time.
Yep.
But as always, it's a fantastic time to talk to you, Mr. Deshaies.
Yeah.
And we'll be back again next month, Thursday of the month.
Thank you very much, Eric. Yeah. And if anybody wants to, go to the town website. And we're working on, I think we're going to get a full-time IT person. So I'm hoping that they update the website and make it better.
Nice.
But my name, my phone number, my cell phone number, they're all on there. Anybody needs to talk to me 24/7. Maybe not after 1 a.m.
I can't blame you. All right. Thanks again for being here today. It's 1:00.
Thank you very much.